We are in the middle of the Halachos of Hashavas Aveda. I'm not going to review what we did last week, but we discussed just the points. We discussed what the mitzvah was. We discussed how far does it go, meaning what cases are included. In addition to finding things, we also discussed question of do you have to that you have maybe have to help save somebody else's property or prevent damage. We had a bunch of cases about that. One addendum to that, if you remember, we had. Question: we looked at a shuva of Rav Moshe about zoning laws, and I was wondering what the case was exactly. What Rav Moshe said, there was a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to fight, you know, to help the neighbors fight the government, whatever they're instituting. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Joel Rich, from I forgot where he lives, somewhere in the United States, in the New York area, I think. So he emailed me a link to Wikipedia, and I'll read it to you. I'll read to you what it says that basically tells us what's going on here. So thank you to him. Basically, this is what they said. In 1966, Mayor John Lindsay announced plans to build three 24-story low-income housing projects on the empty block. This is, again, in Forest Hills, on the edge of Forest Hills, as part of his scatter site plan, where low-income projects would be spread out among largely middle-class white neighborhoods. Fearing that Forest Hills would decay into a minority ghetto.
Georgetown Mews, is that what it's called?
I don't know if that's what it was called. It might be, maybe actually, I think you're right. Yeah, maybe that's what it's called. I didn't copy that part of the link. But yeah, maybe that's what it's called. The local residents formed the Forest Hills Residents Association to protest the plans. As a compromise, the height of the towers was reduced to 12 floors, and 40% of the residents were to be elderly. It's always a good solution, right? They're elderly, they can't cause too much trouble, right? In addition, as population for the project age would be recognized as an NORC, and then they have a whole bunch of other things here, etc., etc., etc. Okay. Construction commenced in 1971 amid violent protests. In 1976, the buildings were completed. Until the early 1990s, the project's population was largely white, elderly, and
Jewish.
Very good. I have a guess. Following a 1992 investigation alleging discrimination, the white percentage of the residents has decreased in favor of more minorities. Okay, eventually it came to that. That's what Moshe's talking about. Okay, that's his case, where, again, it was a little earlier than I thought. This was in the late 1960s, beginning of the 1970s. That's where Rav Moshe they were all fearful that this co-op, or I think it was a co-op project in Forest Hills, was going to create different groups of people in the neighborhood that they felt would be damaging to the people that were, the Jews that were already there. So that's where Moshe says there's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to help the residents nearby to fight the allowance for this project. Okay.
That was because they would lose property value.
Yeah, that was part of it.
From
that was part of
our aspect, from the Hashavas Aveda. They're losing something.
Good. So Rav Moshe, yeah, did Rav Moshe point that out directly?
So Rav Moshe said... Is it Hashavas Aveda?
Rav Moshe, the reason why he felt there was Hashavas Aveda is because... people will not be able to live there because of the paha. They're scared. And they're scared of who else is coming into the neighborhood. I think you're right. He also said...
Well, how is that related to
Hashavas Aveda? So you're saying that they're going
to
help...
He says, therefore, it's, you know, you're not allowed to help the government, and you have to help them defend it, to you know, to fight it, to protest, because it's Hashavas Aveda de Haguf, of physically, and mammon, and property. I guess that's what you're saying. So the property value is going to go down, and for themselves, if they're scared they're going to have to pick up and leave the neighborhood, then that's a Hashavas Aveda on both counts.
So, but he actually approaches from the side that you're preventing a Hashavas Aveda.
Yeah, meaning
right.
In that case, that's what we said before. I mean, we discussed last time that according to many Achronim, based on the Gemara, that Hashavas Aveda includes helping somebody prevent damage to their property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what it's based on. That's where he's getting it from. Okay, that's what we discussed last week. I'm not going to go through it again, but that's what it's based on. Being based on the case of preventing damage to your property, to your grounds, your level, your land, or your, to your building, that the horror should be included. Very good. Okay, let's go on to our next sections here. The next section that we'll begin talking about tonight is, last week I forgot to mention, last week we just discussed also Shavuot Kruta and other cases where Hashavas Aveda does not apply exceptions to the rule, which again we're not going to review now, but that was the general category. Now, next thing we are going to discuss is start with the basic rule, and then we'll get into some of the details. The basic rule: when are you chayav to return a lost object? When does Hashavas Aveda apply, and when does Hashavas Aveda not apply? When are you allowed to keep it? So this is something just pretty The basic rule is pretty famous. Most people know this. Let's look inside. If you look at the source sheet, where is it here? Section 5. So the source is in section 5. We'll see here again, this is like the first mission that everybody, you know, when they start learning Gemara in fifth grade, this is the mission that you always start with. I don't know if anybody's memory is good that they actually remember from then, or from Daf Yomi a couple years ago. But the Mishnah says, these are the things that can belong to you if you find them. Matzah peres mefuzar, ma'oz mefuzaros, krichos rishos haravim, v'igulei devela, kikaros shel nachto machroz shel dagim. If you find scattered fruit, scattered money, sheaves of wheat in the rishos haravim, in public domain, igulei devela are different kinds of fig cakes, baker type of loaves of bread, and different strings of fish. Again, we're not going to go into the details. The Gemara has all sorts of discussions about each of these cases to, you know, precisely identify exactly what the case is that we're talking about, but the general rule here, if you look at Rashi in source number 15, is the following. And Rashi says, Nisyashu abalamam. The key point here is that the owners have already had yeush. Okay, yeush means they already gave up hope. Kidavar Gemara, as the Gemara says, v'hefkerhim. And they're already considered to be hefker. So the point is that any case where we can assume that the owner already gave up hope, who was miyayish, once he gave up hope, he basically has relinquished ownership to that object, and therefore it does not belong to him anymore. That's the case when you're allowed to pick it up. What is it based on? Meaning, how do you know when he has had yush or not? Meaning, what factor would you look at to see whether he would have had yush? So look at the second Rashi of Ma'os Mefuzaros in the case of scattered money. So Rashi points out, Holo ve'ein lahem siman nikar yushim me'ayish. The key way to know whether a person had yush or not is whether there is a siman, whether there's some sort of identifying characteristic on the object. If there was not, then basically we have to assume that he was miyayish, the havelu who hefker, and Rashi says it's considered to be hefker, it's ownerless, and that's the reason for all the cases in the Mishnah. What's the point? So the point is that if you don't have a siman on it, then the person realizes, even if you would say, I'm not miyayish, but there's no way that he can get his object back because of the fact that if there's no way anybody else can figure out who it belongs to, every single type of fruit that's scattered all over the floor, every single coin looks exactly the same. Every single, again, the other cases, again, we have to assume the krichos case, the case of the fig cakes or the baker's bread, or these are all, I guess you would call them general types of objects that every single one looks exactly the same as every single other one. There's no special unique characteristics of one over the other. Therefore, you have to assume the guy was going to give up hope because there's no way he can figure out that anybody who finds it would be able to figure out how to give it back. Now, before we get to any questions on this, let's wait a few minutes because we might answer some of your practical questions of how to do this today. We'll get to it. Okay, don't worry. We'll get there. I can't say I'll have good answers, but we will discuss it. Okay. That's the first case of no siman. If you look at source 16, so here's this is also pasuk in the Shulchan Aruch, the point of the Yeush, how does Yeush work? So the Shulchan Aruch basically says, it's based on the Gemara, Matadar Shenis Yashua Balimano, if you find something that the owners had Yeush for, they gave up hope, what's the example? Kigon Sha'amru Vavai Lachisaron Kis. If they said something along the lines of, Oy is to me, I can't believe I lost all this money, right? In that case, even if it does have a siman, it belongs to the person that found it. So that moves us into the next case of when it does have a siman. Let's look at source 17, then we'll go back and explain both of them together. In source 17, this is the Gemara on Daf Chav Dalet on the days of Messiah. The Mishnah. The Elu Chayav L'Hachros. These are the cases that you do have to announce. What are they? Matzah Peres B'Kli, if you found fruits in a utensil. O Kli Kamoshu, or you find just a utensil by itself as it is. Most bekis, you find money, but the money is not standing by itself. It is instead in some sort of pouch or wallet. O kis kamoshu, or you find a wallet, a little type of thing that could hold the money by itself. Tzvura peres, if you find a group of fruits that are packed up together or placed together. Tzvura mos, or a group of coins of money of some sort that are placed together. In those cases, you do have to announce it. And Rashi explains here why is that in source number 18. Matzah peres b'chli u'stam kli yesh bo siman. Most kalim have some sort of siman, some sort of way to identify that kli that you can distinguish that utensil from some other type of utensil. And again, that's going to be the reason for all the rest of these cases. The cases where the fruit or the money is packed up or neatly placed, that by itself could serve as a siman that would identify that money or that fruit as opposed to other fruit that might be somewhere else in the marketplace. All these cases where there is a siman, then we'll say that that the halacha is you have to return it, you have to announce it, because we assume that the owner has not yet given up hope. He knows there's still a chance of getting back his property. However, as we saw in source 16, the Shulchan Aruch says that if you know 100% that even if there was a siman, the owner was heard saying, I give up hope. I don't think there's any way I'm ever going to find my object again. So then in that case, you would still say that the finder can keep it. If you know 100% that the owner gave up hope, even if there was a simon, you're still allowed to keep it. Okay. Up till now, any questions just on the basic rules of what we said? Again, we have not gotten to the practical point of how to apply this yet, but...
Is there any to give it back anyway or not?
What do you mean to give it back anyway? In the case where...
4 years.
Oh, you absolutely do not have to give it back. If you want to, that's a wonderful thing to do, but the halacha does not require... It definitely does not require.
Definitely,
if you want to call it, you know, the Asis HaYashar HaTov, something along the lines of Lifnim Mishur HaSadin, that, you know, that is mentioned, I think, by some of the posting.
No, it's obvious that you're allowed to. That's
right. I think we say, I mean, in terms of Lifnim Mishur HaSadin, if you want to do something really, really nice, it's definitely really nice to give it back. That's a wonderful thing. You definitely are not chayav to give it back. It absolutely halachically belongs to you.
And if it's just money that's not in a kli, then you don't have to make an effort.
So the normal.
But if you know, like 10 people walk by this area between then and then, and so it has to be one of their.
Good. So most of the time we say for money that you don't have to give it back. The exception to the rule will be if the money is placed in, you know, a very specific way. If you have some way of finding out who the person is, this also is true for all these cases, the post can say that if you know who it belongs to, if you know who it belongs to, then even if it doesn't have a siman, you still are obligated to try to give it back. Okay? I mean, in that case, it apparently is different because, why is it different? That's unclear. But they do seem to say that if you know who it belongs to, then you probably should
even
give it back. Say again?
Even if he had the...
So that's the question that I have to... I don't remember. I need to look that up again. But I think they say that if you know who belongs to you, you do have to give it back, even if there's Yish. And again, why that should be true, I don't remember. I'll have to look that up and I'll let you know that. No, I'll let you know next time.
Yeah,
Kuzum, like that. I don't remember. Unfortunately, I apologize. I don't remember.
I both have the more than you.
Okay, now I'll have to find it here. It's here somewhere. Again, I apologize afterwards. Where they say? What
did you see it fall out of someone's pocket?
Oh, so then
and you know that he right. He would give up hope.
Right.
There would be Yayush because he doesn't realize it, and so again, how is that any? I mean, it's crazy.
So
it's
a good question. Again, if he's still there, obviously you call him before he leaves, and then
it's the right thing to do. But according to the halacha,
right.
If you see that he didn't notice, and so by the time
right.
he gets home, you see him getting the
right.
He's going to give up Yayush. I mean, it could be anywhere.
Right.
I had
so,
but you pick it up before Yayush.
When I was 15, there was a list with a friend of mine, and we thought about it the whole summer. Because 20 shekel note fell from his pocket, and I saw it fall. So we had a big question, can I keep it or not?
What is distinguishing the point? The fact that... At what point does he, until he realizes he loses it, there's
okay,
no yay?
Okay, so that's good. So that's going to be part of the answer to David's question before. It's not going to completely answer it, but that will partially answer the question. Not every single case where there's no siman, can you automatically keep it? That's going to depend on the question of when he found out that he lost it, which we'll get to in just a couple of minutes. Okay, so that will at least partially respond to your question. Here, the case here they talk about, I found it now. If you know who it belongs to, so then you have an obligation to give it back. So the truth is, it could be that they're talking about the case where there's no siman. I'd have to look at this again more carefully. It could be they're talking about a case where there isn't. I'm sorry, where there is a siman. If there is a siman, then that's when you'd have to find. If you know who the person is, you give it back to them. If there's no siman, then you know you should apply the regular rules of Yayush. Okay, I'll check that for next time just to make sure. But yeah, it could be that you don't give it back if there's no siman, even if you know who it belongs to. Okay. I'm trying to go back and forth between the source sheet and my notes here because we didn't have enough source sheets. So apologies. Just a couple minutes here. All right. In terms of second, are there more of the first one?
Yeah, we could share.
You sure?
Yeah.
You sure? Okay. We need everything together. Sure. Everything. Good. Thank you. Okay. So let's move on here. The question that we'll get to later is about Yehu Shalomi Das. At what point do you know or do you assume that the owner gave up hope for losing something that did not have a siman? That we will get to shortly. We're not going to get to that just yet, though. First, let's talk just for a few minutes about what could be siman. Okay, what is an identifying siman? Now, I have to admit, this is the area which I am just completely confused. I cannot figure out for the life of me how to put these sources together and how to identify halacha l'maaseh, which things are considered to have a siman, which things are not. It's a little bit tricky. I'll tell you what you know what's in the Makoros, and we can decide what things we can understand and which things we don't quite understand. Basically, the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch look at the following factors as being valid simonim in terms of things that you would say you have to return. If you look at source number 19, okay, this will give us a nice group of the different types of simonim. Ein hamotzeh, this is from the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Tanach Beis. Ein hamotzeh mitziyah chayav lahachriz. Somebody who finds a lost object is not obligated to return it. Ela b'davar sheish bo siman. Except for something which has a siman, which we know already, but look what how he qualifies that. B'gufo, it's got to be a siman about in or on the object itself. O shara'ui li ten siman v'makomo. Or, again, this is based on a discussion of the Gemara, but this is the bottom line. If you can make a siman out of the location where it was lost. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's just focus on these two for a second and just make sure we understand what he's talking about here. In terms of gufo, so what we mean here is the object itself has to have some sort of unique factor about it. Now, again, this is where things get a little tricky here. Some of the Rabbi Bodner here in his book basically says if you just identify that... actually, you know what? Let's put it this way. Yeah, Rabbi Bodner seems to think that if you're if you have, let's say you drop a pen, let's say it's a blue pen, and somebody finds a pack of blue pens somewhere, and they want to know should they announce it, do they have to return it? So he says, well, you could say maybe it's a pack of blue pens, that's good enough. You should just announce it, and somebody will say, I lost a pack of blue pens. You're good to go. So he says that's not a good enough simon. That's not considered to be a simon begufo because you can find tons and tons of other pens that are also blue. So that the color and the fact that that pack that's blue does not necessarily serve as enough of an identifying characteristic. Certainly that if somebody comes to you and they tell you they lost a blue pen, that's not good enough. And again, do you have to return it? So it could be, it's not clear, but I think he might be saying that that's not considered to be a valid siman bichlal, meaning that if you find a pack of blue pens, then maybe you could keep it, because that's not considered to be a siman begufo. Again, I'm not 100% clear about this, but what he does say would be a siman begufo, which definitely a siman begufo, is if there's something special about any of the pens on their own, meaning one of the pens has a mark on it, one of the pens has something that you can tell that this pen is different from every other blue pen that is out there on the market. Okay. Again, if you ask me, what about the brand? Okay, it's a Bic pen, or it's I don't remember what pens they have in Israel, but the Bic pens in America, we still use those all the time. I still think they're the best ones. So is that good enough to say that that's that brand is good enough? So again, I'm not sure. I would have thought that maybe it is good enough to say that you should return it, but Bonner seems to say, again, I'm not sure this is definitely what he's saying, but he seems to say here that's not good enough, that you really have to have some sort of simon about the pen itself, because there's thousands and thousands and thousands of Bic pens out there. Now again, if you ask me, in Eretz Yisrael, maybe these pens are not so common here, maybe that is a good siman in Eretz Yisrael. How many people have American pens here in this country? Not so many, right? So it could be that here, maybe that would be a good siman. So again, I'm leaving this as a bit of a tzarchian.
Or if you have paper, the paper here is different than the state, the size of it.
So good, so again, if you have paper from other places, I could definitely hear that would be considered a siman. But the normal standard paper here, who's gonna want to return paper anyway, though? Does anybody care about paper? So we'll see later. We'll discuss the question of if nobody cares whether they lost it in the first place. We'll discuss that, how that works. But again, here we're just trying to get the basic klalim down, or at least know what the basic klalim should be, even if we don't know how to apply them so well. So that's one element here. Again, that's clear. If you have a specific, someone on the item itself, that's different from this item, from the one next to it, which is otherwise the same, so that could be a definitely a valid simon. In terms of location, so when we say simon b'makomo, so simon b'makomo basically means that in a place where if you know that you left something somewhere, again, if you dropped it, if you forgot it somewhere, this is not going to work, because if you forgot it, well, how would you know where you forgot it anyway? So then if you try to, that's not necessarily going to help. So basically, somebody who finds something, this is based on the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch here, if you find something and it looks like it was dropped on the street somewhere, so that is that the location is not necessarily going to serve as a valid simon that would say that you have to return it, because the guy that dropped it probably doesn't know where he dropped it. He might be able to figure out it was somewhere on the 10 blocks between, the shul and somewhere outside of, in our case, the yeshuva, outside on the street, whatever city we're talking about. But he won't know exactly where it is, and therefore, that still may not be good enough to say that he was not miyayish. That's in terms of location. But if it's clear that he left it there by accident, meaning he put it down, let's say he went to the park, or he went to shul or whatever it was, and he put it down somewhere, and then he left it there, so that already, if it's clear that it was placed somewhere, but it's in a public place, which again we'll discuss a little more later, but assume that, let's say, you have to announce, you have to give it back, so in that case, that could be a valid siman, because the guy can come to you, he won't be miyayish, he'll know, oh, I left it in the shul, I left it in the park, I see I found a sign that says, something was lost, now I can go to the person and say, I lost my thing at this and this location. Again, we're not going to get into so many details here. Rabbanan also discusses that the Acharonim seem to say here that if you just say that it was in the park, you just say it was in a general place, that's not necessarily good enough. You have to say exactly where it was in the park. I left it on the bench. I left it, you know, by the swing. That's, again, you know, the, what was going to give you the at least in terms of returning the item, what people have to tell you to get it back. That's they'd have to say exactly where it was found. So again, I admit that we're not getting into every single, we're not answering every single question here, but these are the general clone. Okay, what else do we have included here? So the Shulchan Aruch continues, if there is a siman obik sharav obiminyano obimidaso obimishkalo. Okay, the way that it's tied, okay, if you have something which is tied together, or it's tied, let's say, to a fence, let's say, which is not exactly this case, but any of those kinds of cases, if it's something which is tied in a very unique way, that also is a way that you can identify it as a simon, and you can say that you have to return it, and the owner didn't give up hope. Obiminyano, the amount, again, this is going to be relevant for certain things. Okay, one piece of fruit that fell on the floor is not necessarily going to be, you don't have to announce, but if there's a whole group of them, you could say, I lost five of this object, I lost, you know, five socks, I lost, you know, 10 coins that were with each other, that already could be that might be considered a valid siman, and that you might have to return, and that might be true even for coins. If the coins are placed in a specific way, it could be that's good enough. Again, if they're scattered all over the place, as we saw in the mission, that's not necessarily good enough, because there's no way to know who it belongs to, there's no way to, you know, the person already is going to be biased right away. But again, if it was placed in a specific location, and you find, you know, a stack of coins, so that already, you know, could be, that would qualify as a siman. A very unique coin also might qualify as a siman. If you have, you know, a very special coin that's not so usual, or you have a very, very expensive coin, or a very, very expensive, you know, amount of money, that also could be a valid siman. You probably would have to return it. One of my guys that I learned with on Tuesday, so he told me he found by the Manas, he found the one shekel coin somewhere, you know, next to a different coin, like on the ground, but it was like placed right underneath another type of regular coin, and then he had a one shekel coin, a one agura coin, that's what I meant to say, a one agura coin. Has anybody ever seen a one agura coin before? No. Does anybody think it's valuable? Probably not, even though they don't use it anymore. What? No, it's the new type, but it's one agura. One agura. It says one item, not ten. One. Yeah. So he was asking me whether I thought that was considered to be, you know, is that considered to be a good enough simon that you have to return it? Hmm. So it's a good question. I said, I don't think we've gotten quite to that point yet that you would say that people really care so much about a one agura coin, that that's considered to be a good enough siman that he wouldn't be me. I wasn't sure, but I didn't think so. I didn't think I had to worry about that so much.
But it could be a siman for the other coin.
For what? Which other coin?
If there was a one agura on it at 10 shekels.
Right, so the other coin, I think, was just like a 10 agura piece. So again, is that close enough to the case where you have a whole set of coins that are organized together? I'm not sure. I don't think so. Unless you say that a one agura piece is valuable, in which case maybe the kid that put it there was trying to hide it or place it there on purpose, you know, that I could hear that maybe, but I don't really think that was the case. Okay, let's go on. Then he says, that's midaso mishkalo, or if you know the measurements of the item, if you can say how big it is, or how much it weighs, either of those kinds of cases also, which are, let's say, unique to this specific item, that's also something that you can that could be used as a valid siman, to announce it and also to get somebody to give it back. Avalim ein bo shum siman, if it has no siman, afilo b'mechomo, even if it's in its place, kigon shenikar shelo hunach sham b'chavana, al derech nafilo b'asham, as we said before, if it was dropped there, so then the location is not going to be a good siman, because he doesn't even know where he lost it. How is he going to think he's going to find it? Im hu davar sheyesh l'slo shabal al hergishu b'miyaka shenafo mimano, so here's the next point now. Okay, if it's something that you can assume that the owner immediately noticed right away that it was lost, o machmas kovdo, o machmas chashivu, so v'tamilei b'mashrish bo umargish kishenova hari hu shalmotzan. Either because it's heavy, that you would notice right away if you dropped it, because it was too heavy, or it's important, and you always would be checking in your pockets to see, do I have my, you know, my MP3 player, do I have my wallet? And you would immediately notice within a couple minutes afterwards that you dropped it. So in that case, you can assume that it belongs to the person that found it, because shahari nisiyayish miyakish yadasha nafal. Because he would give up hope immediately as soon as he lost it. Now again, if he's 10 steps away, he could just turn around in 30 seconds and walk back to the location where he dropped it. Maybe not. We're talking about where the guy is long gone. Okay, he's a couple minutes later. He realizes shortly afterwards that it was gone because it was important. It was in his wallet, it was pocket, whatever it was. In that case, if the object has no silon, kevin she'ein bo silon, since there's no silon, above the edge of a heter, it's permitted for him to take it. In that case, it's mutter to keep it, kevin she'ein yashu balo, because we can assume that the person gave up hope. Right away. Now, again, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this now. Just to mention the point, this gets into it here. The Yehu Shalom Midas case. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch is getting at the following here. Okay, the rule is as follows. Let's say that you don't know yet that the person gave up hope. Okay, let's say you don't know it. There's no simon. Okay, you find, you know, a couple coins, or you find, you know, a sock or something, a shoe or something on the street. Okay, there's no simon. Okay, it's something which could have been, you know, 100 shoes that sit that look exactly the same. There's no way to figure out who it belongs to. You could assume that the person is going to have yeush. But the problem is, how do you know that he found that already? How do you know that he realized that he lost it? If he doesn't realize that he lost it yet, so then there's a question. Maybe he didn't have yeush. Okay, he doesn't know he lost it. How could there be yeush? So that's the whole discussion of the Gemara. The Gemara discusses that question, and this is a famous machlokas of yeush shelo midas. Can you have yeush before you actually know that the thing is lost? So if you look at the second source sheet, part two here, source number one, so again, we're not going to go through the whole Gemara, but I just quoted a couple lines here for you. Yeush shelo midas, what is the status of yeush before you know that it was lost? Meaning, is that considered to be valid yeush? The minute that you know that it's lost, you will give up hope, because there's no way you know you don't think you're getting it back. But before you know it's lost, is that valid yesh? Abai amar lo havi yesh. Abai says that's not valid yesh. Rava amar havi yesh. Rava says it is yesh. And the Gemara says, b'dar sheyesh b'simon kol amar lo pli. Everybody agrees if there is a simon, to lo havi yesh. It's not yesh if there is a simon, because he can expect to get it back. Ki pli the machlok is b'dar she'ein bo simon. When there's no simon and he doesn't yet know that he lost it, is that considered to be yesh? Abai amar lo havi yesh. Abai says that's not yesh. He didn't know yet. So if he didn't know, of course he wasn't miyayish. Rava says, though, havi yesh, that is yesh. The minute that he knows it'll get lost, that he lost it, he's going to give up hope. Neymar Amar, he's going to say, Simon alefti begavi, I have no Simon. Mehashtu huti mash, so therefore we treat it as if he was miyash right now, even before he knows that he lost it. Bottom line, this machlokas, we pass, this is one of the famous cases in the Gemara, where we pass him like Abai, even though usually we pass him like Rava. In this case, this is one of the Yal Kagam cases, we pass him like Abai. The rule is that if the person has not yet given up hope, and, because he didn't know that he lost it yet, and if there's no Simon, it's not yours yet. Okay, it's not yours. So that creates a whole question of how to deal with that. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch is basically saying here, that the very last couple lines in source 19 and on the first on part one of the source sheet, basically he's saying that in a case where you don't know yet that the person gave up hope because he didn't know that he lost it yet, so then already you might still have some sort of obligation to give it back to him. Okay, that's going to be a question. And the details of that we'll deal with later, either tonight or next week. But that's the case that he's talking about. If he doesn't know that he lost it yet, so then you have a big question. Maybe it's not yours because there was no yeush, and then you're gonna have a question: what to do with that type of item? Do you have to pick it up? And if you have to pick it up, is it yours? What do you do with it? Now, that's a question which we'll get to a little bit later. Again, just to review, what the Shulchan Aruch is saying though is any item that you can assume that the person realized right away that it was lost because it's heavy or because it's important, those things you can assume within a couple minutes that it was dropped. He knew that he lost it, and he was already miyash, and you can therefore keep the item. Okay. Any questions about this? No, I can't say that it's all clear, but no additional questions for now. Okay. Very good.
This is a terrible question, but it does apply to people. Let's say, God forbid, if someone kidnapped, you give up hope that you lost, and then someone.
If someone was kidnapped, and what?
You give up hope that you lost. Your child, God forbid.
I don't think so. I don't think a person, this is like, you know, I don't think a person ever gives up hope that they lose their child, God forbid. There are questions about it, interesting questions on Hilchos Shabbos. Can you be Mechal Shabbos to take back a child that was taken away, you know, to the Christians or something like that, you know? So it's clear that you didn't give up hope. Apparently there is some, they think there's some hope to get them back.
Right.
And, you know, they discuss maybe you can do Mechal Shabbos, but even though it's not a physical, you know, Pikuach Nefesh, it's a spiritual Pikuach Nefesh. There are also interesting stories after the Holocaust. These are famous stories, you know, when rabbis went around to the different, you know, the convents and the churches, and they, you know, they walked in and suddenly started screaming out, Shema Yisrael, Shema! You know, so you looked quickly to see which kid's eyes, you know, light up. And the minute you see the eyes, grab them and run out, you're coming with me, you know, you're Jewish. So, you know, it's never too late to say that a person is lost, I don't think. I hope that we should never be in a situation where we have to deal with that type of case. Okay, there's some other interesting cases here, which again, I don't want to get into too many details, but it's interesting to talk about. In terms of some of the practical points, again, I'm going to leave these as some questions for now, but again, all the types of, let's say, like shirts and shoes and, you know, anything, let's say, something like this. If this was lost, is this considered to be something with a simon? So I assume that most of these kinds of cases, you can assume that there is a simon. Okay, this is obviously unique. You can know what brand it's, you know, who made it, the MP3 player. You can see what size it is, how much, you know, memory it has. There's enough things about this that could be considered a simon, even though you definitely find other MP3 players like that on the market. Same thing as well for shoes and shirts and things like that. You know, most of them have ways that you can identify them that would make it, you know, they would be considered to have a simon. And in theory, you would have to announce them. Again, we'll see halacha l'maisa a little later, either tonight or next week, that maybe it's not so simple. Other things that are interesting that people don't always notice that could be a suman is a question. So the Sma basically says, this is in Rish Sanof Beis, I think, that anybody that won't notice something about an item, let's say the amount of how many things it is, won't necessarily count as a siman. What does that mean? It means that anything that a person won't usually notice, even if it belongs to him, but he won't necessarily notice something, you know, very small on the item that's slightly different about it, will not count as a siman. So based on that, so the Sefer Hashavas Avira Kalacha basically says that if you know that there's like a little bit of a small dirt or a small little scratch that's not usually noticeable, that's not necessarily a valid siman. You wouldn't necessarily say that you need to return that if, other than that, you know, there's no other way to distinguish that from anything else. So he has an interesting discussion there, which again, we're not going to discuss in detail, but let's say that you found, and this would actually work early, you can ask him about this, he found a kartisya at the bus stop, right, out of the yeshuv in Yad Binyamin. Okay, it's, you know, one of the Yad Binyamin bus cards with the five click things on it. He found it. So halacha, do you have to return that? Is there identifying characteristics on it?
How many clips?
Oh, so that's the question. So that's exactly the point. So the Sefer HaShavas Avira Kalacha, he's suggesting, and there's room to disagree here, but he suggests that the amount of clicks that each bus card has been used for, he says that's something that most people don't usually look at. And therefore, he says that's not considered to be enough of a siman, and you would halachically be allowed to keep that. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you ask me, I think that's not so clear. Okay, mm-hmm. I often look at I won't know maybe exactly how many clicks there, but I'll know if there's a difference. If there's, you know, if I have a Yerushalayim bus card, which I use in Yerushalayim, you could get, you know, 10 on there for a regular person. I would know if there's, you know, I won't know if there's 5 or 6, but I'll know if there's 1 or 9 or 5. You know, I'll know that it's close to 5. So, you know, certainly for Yad Binyamin, you only get 5 clicks in the first place, and it's very expensive. It's 73 shekel, and whatever, however many I grew up to get the Yad Binyamin bus cartouche. Yeah, I usually know pretty well how many things are on there. I don't always know, but it could see that there might be room to argue with this. And indeed, Rav Orlean, if you look at the bus stop, his note is still up there. Okay, next time you got to that bus stop, he wrote a note saying that I found about Kartis Yah in Hebrew and English. Anybody that found it anybody that lost it should come contact me. So again, I think a hakol fi ha'inyan, any of these kinds of things, there's room to discuss and see, you know, is that the kind of thing that a person would be automatically miyayish? Is it something that he knows? Where was it lost? Not so simple.
So anyway, but from Rav Orlean's point of view, what kind of simanim is he expecting at this point? Just the,
I didn't ask him about it. I just saw the sign. He was just asking about it. I should ask him. But I assume that he would say, you know...
How many clicks?
I assume so. I'll have to ask him. I assume that he would say, based on the safer, that's his safer, by the way, the Hashavas Avira Kalacha is his safer. So if he read his safer, I think he underlined that part, actually, the part about the bus card, I think it was underlined in the safer here. I have to take a look. But that could be one thing that you'd look at for Simon. Okay, very good. So we're going to leave it at that for now. Okay, the next question. And this...
Two issues.
Okay, there's a lot of issues here.
There's the presence and the absence of a siman, which obliges me to return it versus keeping it.
Right.
And there's the issue of trusting the person who claims it's his.
Good, yes.
It might not be the same klal.
Correct, you're correct.
When you ask how would he decide, it might be a different criterium for deciding that.
Good. So that's a good point. That's what I'm assuming, but the parameters for exactly how different they are is not entirely clear. We'll deal with the question of how to give it back more in the discussion of hachraza, of how to announce it, which we probably will not get to tonight. We'll finish it up in our concluding shiur next week. But basically, in short, I showed you the Shulchan Aruch before in source 19 that, you know, talks about the different types of simanim in terms of finding it and whether you have to give it back or not. When it comes to the question of claiming the item, so that there the Shulchan Aruch is not in Reish Samach Beis, that's in Reish Samach Zayin. Again, we'll talk about that next time, but basically the Shulchan Aruch from there seems to say that you need to have a siman mufak. You have to claim it using a siman mufak. What's a siman mufak? It means a better type of siman. It means you can't just say, oh, it's red, it's green. Okay. It could be that in terms of picking it up and announcing it, that if any object that, you know, is at least somewhat unique, even a little bit unique, even in terms of the color or, you know, what size shoe it is or size, you know, shoe you find in the park, all sorts of different shoes that are left there or whatever. So in terms of that, it could be that's good enough to say that you should announce it, but in order to get it back, it could be that the person, you know, he has to give a siman mufak, which means that according to Rav Banner, he for sure can't say that the color of the shoe, that's not good enough, apparently. Maybe he has to say something else about the shoe, what type of shoe it was, and not entirely clear, but you're right, but there definitely could be, it is a possible difference between them. Again, halacha l'maaseh, in those cases, you actually have to pick it up and announce it, we'll get to shortly. Okay, this is all just outlining the rules here.
It could be less.
Could be less, meaning what?
The siman for returning might be less than the siman for announcing.
Correct. No, that's what I'm saying. That seems to be probably correct. It's not 100% clear, but it seems to be. It's definitely clear that for announcing it, you need to claim it. You need to have a siman mufak. But it's clear from the Shulchan Aruch that's not the case. And the Shulchan Aruch definitely requires. We didn't get to Talmud Chacham at all. I don't think we'll get to it tonight, but in short, what David's referring to is that for a Talmud, in a place where there are Talmidei Chachamim can get away with giving less types of identifying characteristics if they're claiming an item. If they come to somebody and say, that's my watch that was lost, even if, you know, they don't give a simon mufak, the halacha for Talmud Chacham is that he's allowed to claim it. If he looks at it and says, that's mine, that's good enough. It's called Tvius Ayin, which we'll maybe talk about next time. Right, exactly.
What qualifies as an announcer?
So announcing again, we'll talk about next time. Talk about Hachorazim, so make sure you come back. That's discussed. In terms of a Talmud Chacham, it's also not clear who's a Talmud Chacham. There's a very wide range here, which again, maybe we'll talk about next time, but just in short, the Kisser, there's Rav Moshe is very machmir. Rav Moshe, quoted in a bunch of the Sfarim, I don't think it's in the Tshuva, but it's in one of the articles he wrote. He basically says that even a Rav, even somebody who has smicha, so to speak, you know, why you smicha? Okay, so for sure they don't accept why you smicha in the Haredi world. But even for this context, Rav Moshe might say that why you smicha is not good enough to create a Talmud Chacham. According to Moshe, it has to be. Second?
I guess I'm out.
You have Yisrael Smicha?
No.
Even I might be out, according to Moshe. Moshe's criteria basically is anybody that basically never ever lies. If he never ever lies, except for the one or two, you know, couple cases in the Gemara says you're allowed to lie for, then you're a Talmud Chacham. Yeah, but yeah. Anybody else does not qualify. So Moshe says, even people that are called, he says. Second?
In this regard.
What else do you want to compare it to? What other things do we want to know about Talmud? Tell me this from here.
You want to go up and test?
So tell your watcher, listen to this. You want to go up and test? Could be. No, so we'll see in a second. We'll see in a minute. There's the hope. There's still, there might be hope for you. Hold on. Wait, according to the other Shita. Listen to this. Rav Moshe says basically that, where is it here? He says, here it is. He says, Rav Moshe says, this is in the Kuntras Mitzvahs Dine Hashavas Aveda. It's quoted in Rabban or Sefer on page 171. He says, again, we'll discuss Talmud Chacham more next time perhaps, but just the idea here. Did I get it on the source sheet? I don't think I got Talmud Chacham on the source sheet. Is it here? No, I'm sorry, I didn't get it on the source sheet. But anyway, Moshe said based on this point, to Kasha Lomar, the whole Ben Torah or Ben Yeshiva, he gila Madrega. So it's difficult to say that every Ben Torah or every Ben Yeshiva has reached this Madrega of a Talmud Chacham and, you know, somebody who doesn't lie usually. He never alters the truth a little bit, to put it nicely. And then he says, V'af osam hanikraim rabbanim. He says, even those that are called rabbis, right? Even the ones that are called rabbanim that have the title rabbi, lifamim chaser mehem adayim madrega. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes they are lacking this madrega. Meaning, even the rabbi, even if you get smicha, does not mean that you are necessarily a talmud chacham when it comes to hashavas aveda. You have to be honest. You have to say, are you really somebody that really never changes the truth, except for the couple cases in the Gemara that are allowed. On the other hand, there are other poskim that basically say, yes, somebody who, generally speaking, tells the truth is automatically considered a Talmud Chacham, and it could be even somebody who doesn't have smicha. It could be nothing based on your Torah knowledge, but somebody who is an honest person, a Yirei Shemaim, and because of his adherence to Torah values, you know, basically doesn't lie. He basically tells the truth. He's generally honest. Which, again, even though it's basically the same criteria, but the presentation of the other shitas, you know, against Rav Moshe seems to be much more, you know, broad in scope, that you could have a lot of people that are considered to be Talmud Chacham here, as long as, you know, it's considered to be somebody who never lies. And Rabbi Bonner, that's how he passes. Rabbi Bonner passes that way, that it applies to someone who is a Yirei Shemaim, even though he is not a learned person, provided that he is known as one who never lies. Again, fascinating, you know. You have to decide whether do you really not lie or not, and okay, what does lie mean? If you start saying, well, that's not really a lie, I really meant this, I didn't mean that, you know, so that already, yeah, maybe we'll have to have a separate shir on the Isser of Sheker, but that's going to be a question. I don't know if you'll qualify. Okay, very good. Any questions?
Just because you brought up Rav Moshe, can you tell us about last week, the Rav Moshe's Mefarz Tehillah?
Oh, I missed it. I'm sorry. Okay. Listen to the tape where I'll tell you afterwards.
It'll be online.
Okay, let's go on. All right, next question. This is, if you take anything out of these set of shiurim of Hashavas Aveda, Halacha L'Maaseh, the next section we talk about now for the next couple minutes is one out of two of the most crucial points of the whole thing. Okay, if you forget everything else, if you didn't hear, if you weren't listening to anything else, the next case is one of the most important ones, and then a little later, either tonight or the beginning of next week, is going to be the second most important one. If you've learned nothing else, these two points, you must know. Okay, these are the more Halacha L'Maaseh points. They're not necessarily even, you know, straight from the Gemara. We've been talking the last couple of minutes about, you know, what is considered to be a simon, and we said that if something which does not have a simon, you do not have to pick up. I already gave it away. Halacha is that you're allowed to keep it. Okay, halacha is you're allowed to keep it. Now, let's say that you go outside, out of your house, you walk on the street, you walk in the park. You know, there are 25 items down there on the park, and let's say that they qualify as not having a simon. Okay, Okay, very nice. You can keep them. Why in the world would I want to keep somebody's, you know, crock that's, you know, 5 years old, or somebody's sweater from some other family? Why in the world do I want to keep that? I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't want it. Can I just leave it there? Or do you have to pick it up? That's the question. Okay? I can assume that this is halacha l'maaseh for everybody, that most people would probably, in most of these cases, rather leave the item where it is rather than pick it up. Is that correct or not correct?
That is correct.
That's correct, right? And that's why I said this is, if you don't learn anything else here, this is one of the most important points. That is the question. Can you just leave it there? So what
do
you think?
What do you do when your kids pick it up?
Second?
What do you do when your kid picks it up?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yes, that's a discussion. Again,
what
I'm sorry.
What would the person
yeah.
who lost it want?
That's all part, that could be part of the question.
There, so
that,
he come
exactly
back.
Good. So that's basically that. Eric hit on the most important akuda of the entire two or three, you know, three set of series of shiurim here on Hashavas Aveda. Okay. The question is today whether the rules of Hashavas Aveda have changed because of the fact that maybe the person would rather it be left there. That's what we have to discuss. Both in the case where there's no siman, which is right now, and a little later, probably we'll get to it next week, when there is a siman. Even if there is a siman, maybe you'll say that the rules have changed. Okay. So here are some of the shitas that I found. This is a very prominent point both in Rabbi Badner's Sefer as well as in the Hashavas Aveda Kalacha Sefer in Hebrew. So the Shulchan Aruch Harav, this I think I did put on the source sheet here. Let me see if I can find it. So in part two, the source sheet part two, source number 5. This is the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Let's look at this inside and see if you can derive from me, make a deal from here, what he thinks about this point. According to everybody, it's asur min haTorah. Again, I'm just starting you right in the middle of the piece here, but this will get the point for us. It's asur min haTorah, to have in mind to be zochet for yourself, meaning to acquire for yourself, kodem shenis yashu habalim. Okay, before the person, the owner, has given up hope, which again we know already, before he's given up hope, you are not allowed to have in mind to acquire that object as your own. Afilu imhu davar she'ein bo siman. Even if it's something which does not have a siman, which again we discussed already before, if even if it doesn't have a siman, you have to wait until the person gave up hope. If he... Second?
Not the divrei hakol.
No, it isn't the divrei hakol.
For Rava. According to Rava, you don't have a, you would be allowed.
I think the divrei hakol, he means halacha l'maaseh. I mean, the Gemara already passes like a bai. So after the time period of the Gemara, I think that's what he means. So in that case, he says, certainly, as we discussed previously, when the owners know that they're, you know, that they know they lost it, they're certainly going to give up hope. But at this point, they still do not know yet that it was lost. Right? That it was lost. So what does he say you have to do here? Does he say you should leave it there? He says, harizat sarech litlo al das lachzer. You have to pick it up in order to return it. Lamishi is barashu balav al pi edim. Return, meaning you have to return it to the person that will be clear that person is the owner based on witnesses. Meaning this item here does not have a siman. Okay. Usually halacha, you know, the halacha is that you probably would think that that you can keep it. But the problem is if you don't know yet that he was miyayish, if you don't know yet that he gave up hope, right? So then you have a question, right? So I would say maybe just leave it there, right? He says no. He says you got to pick it up in that situation, but you can't keep it. You can't keep it because at the time that you picked it up, you cannot have in mind that it's going to belong to you because he didn't know that it was lost yet. So the Shulchan Aruch Rav says in that case, you have to pick it up and hold on to it and wait until witnesses come and prove that the person, you know, that lost it, you know, it belonged to him. Now in terms of all the points about Yehu Shalomi Das, we're gonna avoid that for now. We're gonna get back to that next week. And Halacha L'Maaseh, what do you do in these kind of situations? But the main point, according to the Shulchan Aruch Rav here, is the following. The main point is that it seems to be that he holds that you must pick it up. That's what it sounds like he's saying. Now again, it's not 100% clear, but it sounds like he's saying, Harei Zet Tzorech Litlo, that even in a case where there's no siman, and you would prefer to leave it there, you don't even know if the guy found out that it was lost yet, it sounds like he's saying you still have to pick it up and hold on to it. Okay, that's the Shulchan Aruch Rav. I agree that it's not 100% clear. I agree. Meaning he's saying, it could be that he's saying the following. It could be that he's saying that you have to pick it up. It could be that he's saying that you have to pick it up. Meaning if you're going to pick it up, you have to pick it up with the intention to return it. You cannot pick it up with the intention of keeping it. Because that's what he said in the first line, that you can't have in mind when you pick it up that you want to acquire it for yourself. So it could be what he means is that if you want to pick it up, then you have to pick it up with the intention of returning it. But you know, it sounds like he's saying you have to pick it up. Second.
Why is it a Sordoraita to pick it up with the intention of?
Because you violated Lo Sucha Le Salim. That's what we discussed a little bit last week. But there's a lotase of ignoring the object that's sitting on the ground.
No. Why is it a Sordoraita to pick it up and put kavana that it's for myself?
That might be included in Lo Sucha Le Salim. That's what the Gemara. There's more about that. It seems to be a problem. If you pick it up with the intention that you're going to take it for yourself, that's basically Xela. And it's also Lesutha Leysalan.
No, the Xela is keeping it.
Okay. That's what you're doing, no? You're picking it up with intention to acquire
it
as your own.
Why is the intention at the time of picking up important? That's what I mean.
Because that's the point when you could decide if I'm picking it up with the intention of keeping it as my own, of acquiring it as belonging to me, or picking it up because I want to return. You understand the difference?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to go on for now.
You
can hop each other
afterwards. It could be both.
Second?
It could be both. Because you could say, I'm picking it up with the intention of returning it.
That's good enough.
And also, if no one reclaims it, I get it. As opposed to not picking it up at all, then you don't have a chance
to
get it.
Okay, so what you presented is probably qualifies as with intention of returning it. If you say that after I can't return it, then I can keep it, then already there's what to
talk about. Both.
We'll talk about that next time when we talk more about Yishalomidas. But for these purposes right now, the main point is if you have intention to return it and that's why you pick it up, that's good enough. What he's saying you cannot do is you cannot pick it up with the intention to keep it as your own. And again, the way that the Achronim here, this is the Rabbi Bodner quotes this as well as I think Hashavas Avedah Halacha, at least possibly. Rabbi Bodner certainly says that what he means here is that you are obligated to pick it up. He quotes that Rav Moshe Feinstein apparently also held this way. And he quotes Rav Moshe in Igros Moshe, Chelek Beis, and Choshen Mishpat, Siman Mem Hei. I do not remember if I put it on the source sheet here or not. Does anybody see that one on the source sheet? I don't think I put it on. I apologize. But I don't think it got on here. Apologize. Rav Moshe seems to paskin in that way, halacha l'mayis, that you actually have a chiyuv to pick it up. That is part of your chiyuv of Hashavas Avedah. Okay, good. That's Rav Moshe. However, other posts disagree. The Rabbi Akiva Eger, in his sefer called Drush V'Chiddush on the Sechus Bava Metziah, he says the opposite. He says that, again, it's not on the source sheet, but he's on here. That's the wrong part, though. There's like five, a couple of different sections. I don't think that's the right part. He's got like, you know. Yeah, but that's. I don't think that's for the same one. Second. No, actually, you're right. Thank you, Eric. Okay. Let's look for a second. So Rav Moshe is in the Hashavas Avedah part two, the part two source sheet, the last source number 11 on the second side. He says, "Ma yasav metziya shamrina yishemu nachad shevo eliyahu." What should you do with a lost object that we say in halacha is that it should be left until Eliyahu comes, which again we'll discuss next time. That's part of Yishalomidas. If you pick it up at the time before with there's no siman, he says, "Kshematz darash embo siman." If you find something which there's no siman, then it's topic imhu kodem yish, and you're not sure has the guy given up hope yet or not. He says, "Mechuyav lekachto." You are obligated to take it. And afterwards, he says, you can write it down, and again, the rest of it we're going to get to next time. Okay, the rest of it is the whole discussion about what you should do with it if you're not sure if you gave up hope yet. That we're going to leave for now. But it seems for Moshe also that you're chayav to pick it up. On the other side, Rav Akiva Eger basically says that you are not obligated to pick up the object and return it because if you pick it up, you still won't know what to do with it. If there's no siman, how are you going to find the guy to return it to? If there's no way that you're going to be able to find the guy in a normal situation to return it to, unless there are eight in that come, which is not so common, then why should you pick it up? Therefore, Rabbi Kivikar says you do not have to pick it up. Rabbi Yashav is quoted both here in Rebbaner as well as in the Hashavas Avedah Halacha as saying that this is how we pass in Halacha L'maisa, that you do not have to pick it up. And I think the Minhag HaOlam is very much on this side here. That most people, if you see things lying around, certainly if there's no siman, you leave it there. Okay, you don't pick it up, you don't do anything with it, just leave it. Again, that is very, very important point, Halacha L'maisa. That's according to Rabbi Yashav, okay. Rabbi Bodner adds in, by the way, that he found here, he apparently heard from Rav Azriel Orbach, that even according to the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who said that you do have to pick it up, he thinks that that's only true for an object that the owner would probably go out of his way to try to get the object back. But if it's an item that the owner himself is not going to bother with, you know, who cares? I lost a little sock, I lost a little something, which is not really worth so much money. You know, I couldn't care less, I'm not going to go, it's not worth my time and effort to go try to find it. Then even the Shulchan Aruch HaRav might agree for that type of item that you don't have to return it, you don't have to pick it up. Okay, any questions? No? Okay, good. That again, that is the first major, major point that if you don't remember anything else in this shiurim, that's the first important point you have to remember, that you're not chayav to pick up something which with no siman, according to the way that many poskim paskin. Yes, and Rav Yashav. And the only exception to that rule, which they don't mention there, but again, this is a question I'm a subuk about. Based on the rule of Talmidei Chacham that we mentioned before, so if there are Talmidei Chacham around, Talmidei Chacham are believed to say, come look at the item and say, that's mine, I'll take it back. So if you know that you live near Talmidei Chacham, whatever that means, maybe you do have a chiyuv to pick it up if there's no siman, because they actually can come and claim it and say that it belongs to me. That's a suffix. And Rav Yashav, the way he's quoted here, doesn't say that. Rav Akiva Eger, also the way he's quoted here, does not say that. I think that's something to think about. Okay. All right. Well, how much time we have? We have a couple more minutes. Let's do one more section here, and then we will call. We'll stop for tonight. Okay. Let's finish up the section of Yehoshalom Das for now. Okay. For tonight, we'll finish up Yehoshalom Das, discussion we had before, and then next week, what we'll start with next week is discussion of cases which do have a siman. If something does have a siman, so we said basically there should be a mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. What do you do? Do you have to pick it up? We'll discuss that next time. Okay, so just to sum up, just for the Yehoshalom Das, again, what we said before is that if you pick up an object without a siman, and you don't know whether the object, the person gave up hope or not, so basically the halacha is that that you can't keep it yet. Okay, so we said before, maybe you don't have to pick it up. Maybe you could just leave it there if you want. If you want to just leave it there, you can't leave it there. But the question is, what happens if you do pick it up, or your kids pick it up, or you want to pick it up? So what do you do? How do you know when the owner is going to give up hope, right? How are you supposed to know when it can become yours? So basically, again, I'm not going to get into so many details here, but basically, the way that it works, it's a bit of a debate in the Mefarshim, it's a bit of a machlokas. Basically, we said before, any item that the owner will know right away that it's lost, you can assume when you pick it up that it's already, he's been the Yaish already. And we said there that anything which, you know, is heavy, that's, he's going to know about his wallet. Probably most people will assume that a wallet, they'll know shortly after it falls down that it was lost. Now again, a wallet might not count because the wallet probably has a siman, but something like a wallet, okay, something like that. If it didn't have a siman, that would definitely be included. Money also, the Shulchan Aruch paskens that people usually check their pockets for money to see if there's money. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, that also would be included as being knowing right away that you lost it. That you can assume when you pick it up that it doesn't, that you can keep it already. Some people say today maybe it's different. Maybe today people don't check their money so often. Maybe today if you find some coins or a 20 shekel bill on the floor or on the ground, maybe the person didn't realize he lost it yet. How many people here would know right away if they lost money? Like just a bill, not a wallet, just a bill. I don't know, you might not know right away. That's a discussion. Okay, so Rav Chaim Kanievsky apparently was told by the Chazon Ish that maybe that it does apply today. Other people say maybe today it doesn't apply. Maybe today things are different, and just because you find money on the floor does not mean you can automatically assume that the person already gave up hope, in which case you have to go back to the original rules. Either you leave it there, according to Rav Akiva Eiger, or if you pick it up, you have to pick it up with intention that you're going to try to return it. And therefore, you cannot assume that it's yours right away. Now, another case in that category, any baby items, okay, pacifier, bottle, things like that, poskim seem to assume are also things that you usually assume you can find out right away that you lost. Within a couple of minutes, the baby's crying, if he doesn't have his bottle, you'll know pretty soon afterwards that that it was lost, and you can assume, again, if there's no siman, that's not the kind of thing that you can assume that there's necessarily a siman for. And so that he's going to be nice right away, you can assume that it's yours, you can keep it. Again, other discussions also, they talk about watches, newspapers, anything that you can assume that he was holding in his hand that he thought would be lost right away would be included. You can pick up, you can keep right away. Now, for anything else other than that, what do you do? What do you do with that item? Okay, you pick it up, you don't know if the guy gave up hope yet. What do you do? So in the posting, again, it's a bit of a debate. The Ramah Paskins, and this is, I'm not going to read it inside now, but it's in the source sheet here somewhere. It's in Simon Reish Samech Sif Yud. If you can find it somewhere here on the source sheet, it is here somewhere. So go looking for it. I think it's in part one somewhere. But basically, the Ramah Paskins that you have to apply Yehi Munachat Shevo Eliyahu. Basically, you've got to hold on to it, keep it there, don't give it back, and that's the end of the story. You can't do anything else with it. You're stuck, basically. Okay. That's what he Paskins. Other people disagree. Other people say maybe you can hold on to it, and then when you know for sure that the owner gave up hope, then you can keep it. So this is an important debate here. Halacha l'maisa, basically, Rav Eliyashiv says the following. He says, he paskins, that if it's relatively expensive or important, then you should follow the rules of Yehi Munachat Shevo Eliyahu. Hold on to it, put it in a safe place, and leave it there. If it's relatively cheap, then, or it's something at least that you know is very easy to use, which we'll get back to in a minute, then you can basically use it now. You can write down what it was, where it was found, and then if the owner comes, you can return it. But until that point, according to, if it's relatively cheap, then you can use it right now. That's the way that it works. The other point that we'll just finish up with that is the following.
Wait, I don't get it. Am I allowed to use the object?
So again, that's the machlokes haposkim. Okay, some say that you can use it. I mean, after the point, if you can, let's say I'll wait a day. After a day, I'm assuming the person found out and he gave up hope. Some say after you know for sure he gave up hope, you can use it. Others say no. If you picked it up before he gave up hope, then it's Yehi Munachat Shevo Eliyahu. You got to leave it on the side and not, you can't do anything with it. That's the machlokas. Rav Yashav's psak halacha l'mayis was that it depends. If it's a relatively inexpensive object, which is easy to, you know, buy another one, it's not, people don't care about so much, then you can use right away, write it down what you lost, what was lost, where it was lost,
And then if the guy comes to take it back, you give it back to him. If it's expensive, then already you can't necessarily do that. You gotta put it aside. That's what he posits. Here is the addendum to that rule.
Lose the object that you found.
That's a good question. That we didn't discuss. But the bottom line is it's, that if it's based on your negligence, then we posit that you're responsible for it. Okay, shomer a shomer aveda, we posit is considered to be like a shomer. Well, actually, it's not so clear what we posit, but certainly if it's lost based on negligence or ruined based on negligence, your negligence, then it seems that you are responsible for it. Okay, maybe we'll discuss that a little more next week. But that seems to be the rule there. Okay, last point for Yehemun HaChashiva Eliyahu. Okay, what do you do today? Okay, if you have an item, let's say you find a safer, a nice safer, or you find, you know, something electronic, or you find a watch, something which maybe, actually a watch is not good because you said the person would know right away that he lost it. Think of something else that a person, it would take, let's say a couple hours before the person would realize that he lost it. And it's subject to the rules of Yehemun HaChashiva Eliyahu. Okay, we said if it's something which is relatively expensive, okay, something which, you know, is not cheap. But there's no simon. Okay, there's no way. There's not really going to be a good way to give it back. So what are you supposed to do with those types of items today? So this is the last point for tonight. Basically, this is how we paskin here. This is based on the Shulchan Aruch. In what is it here? Here, sources 9, 10, and 11 on part 2. Okay, part 2. Okay, look at section 3 at the very end. Sources 9, 10, and 11. So first, the Shulchan Aruch in source 9 gives us another case of Yehi Munach. Hichriz lo bo habal and say amitziyah munach ha'sas lo atchev oliyahu. Okay, we've been discussing a case where there was no simon. But the same thing is true if there is a simon and you announce it, put up signs, and nobody comes to claim it. What do you do now? Same point. So the halacha is that it's also subject to Yehi Munach ha'atchev oliyahu. You got to leave it there. Okay, that's very nice. What do? You just leave it on your shelf for 50 years? What are you supposed to do with it? So basically, the way that it comes down, halacha l'mayis is the following. Look at source number 7. If you found tefillin, pretty expensive, right? So the halacha is you can get it evaluated, how much money it's worth, and then you can wear it im yirtzeh, if you want to. Why is that? Because it's something you can buy anytime. You can go to any sofa or anywhere and buy another pair of tefillin. Basically, according to this, and this is how many of the achronim paskin, anything which is a common object, which basically if you take the object and you use it or you did something else with it, you sold it, you could easily get another object which is basically the same. The halacha of Yehi Munach HaChashiva Eliyahu would be that you're allowed to use it. Okay, all you have to do is write down in a notebook in a safe place what you found, how much it's worth, what the simanim are, and then if somebody comes to claim it, you will know that what it was. But after that point, you can use it yourself or you can sell it.
I mean, do you have to rent it from him if he comes back? You have to pay him for what you used for the time you used it.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But you would have to give it back to him.
What's
okay?
That? Thinking like a lawyer. Yeah,
of course, yeah, obviously. So
why do you have to pay him the value of it?
Second?
Why do you have to pay him the... I thought you actually were going there. I thought you were going to say...
If you want to sell it.
Oh, if you want to sell it.
If you want to sell it. So then the point is, as long as it's easy to buy another one for the owner, if he ever comes to claim it, so that's okay. The Achronim say that today most objects that you've lost, either with a son or without a son, either way, are in this category. Again, Sfarim, clothes, any other kinds of items, either that don't have a siman, that you can, you know, we're not sure whether he was miyayish yet, or if it does have a siman and nobody comes to claim it, either of those cases, again, you can throw out some examples at me here,
but if you sold it, you have to pay him the money?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, that's the point. The reason you write it down is so that you pay him the money. So that's the halacha there.
And at that point, you owe him money.
Yes, correct. If he comes. Okay.
But you can spend it, you can
use it. That's correct. The Shulchan Aruch basically says that you should keep the money for him, but today we basically say as long as you have money in your bank account that you can get, you don't have to keep those exact coins or those exact bills that you sold it for, or if you lost bills and you're just keeping the bills for him. Let's say you lost, $200, a lot of money, but you can't find the owner. What do you do with it? The answer is you're probably allowed to use it, but you have to make sure that if the owner would ever come that you have enough money to give him.
Well, let me ask you
this.
At the Shemitah, would it be an issue?
Meaning?
Or is your debt to him dismissed? Because you have a debt
question. I don't think Shemitah would matter here because it doesn't start until he comes back and claims the item. Okay. I think. Good question. I think that's the answer. In terms of uncommon objects, so here, the Shulchan Aruch, let me just finish this up. Say again? I don't think so, because there's no halva there until the guy comes. You have to you're holding on to it for him. It may be like a Shomer Sachar, but it doesn't mean it's like a Malve, like a Love and a Lender and Lendi. I don't think. When it comes to uncommon objects, so here already it's different. Okay, here we said before that the Shulchan Aruch basically says you got to leave them on the side. Okay, put them on the side and you really can't do anything with it. This includes, again, very rare, more rare sfarim that are hard to find in the stores. unusual tefillin, meaning special mehudar tefillin, unusual type of clothing, let's say family pictures, anything which is with special value. Those things you really have to put on the side. You cannot sell them. You cannot use them. You got to wait. And if the person never comes, so be it. It's, you know, it's going to stay on your shelf for the next 50 years. And you have the status of the Shomer Sachar. Okay, you're responsible for it. At least that is, there should not be any negligence. Okay, again, I'm sorry, there's a lot of details here. I think hopefully we got most of the general principles. Is there anything that anybody's unclear about just in terms of the general categories here and the general rules would help? If you want, I can make an outline form of like a flow chart next time if that's helpful for you. So have something to take away at the end of the next year. You know, in this case, what do you do? In that case, what do you do? Maybe if I'm able to.
Second?
I want you to come over.
Your phone number. Your phone number.
Okay, very good. So we're going to stop here for tonight. Again, next week we're going to start discussing the case of where there is a siman. You have to announce it. So number one, do you have to pick it up? Today, halacha l'maaseh, do you have to pick it up? And if you do, then how do you announce it? What do you do to announce it? How does that work? You know, where do you announce it? What happens if it's found in a shul, in a public place? How does that work? Can the shul say after 30 days it's ours? We'll discuss that, God willing, next week. Okay. Shkoyach.